few seconds. I've modified, as you will see, the title of my talk. Now you don't see it, but now you can see it. And first of all, before I start talking, I would like to thank the organizers for having me. It's a real honor and pleasure, and I'm very, very, very happy that this issue of sustainability, as you will see, which can mean so many different things to people, is being put on the table in such a wonderful seminar. So thank you so much. And I do hope we will have a little bit of time to interact with each other at the end. So my new title is Educating For, With, Interculturality Sustainably. Now, originally I had integrated the idea of sustainability, but because I specialize in interculturality, which I think is a central component of sustainability, I actually reverted to the use of this term. Now, the ideas that you're going to hear about are based on books that I've published this year in English, but there's also one that's been published in the Chinese language. And I will start by saying this. So when I read the description of the seminar, it says that we will be discussing, or that the issue of inclusive and equitable quality education in the formulation of SDG 4 will be discussed today. Now, obviously, we are going through very difficult times, times of crisis, COVID-19. These are exceptional times, as we know, but what we have noticed is that actually what has happened during the pandemic, which is not over, was just in a sense continuation of many of the important issues that we have faced over the decades, you know, in our neoliberal world. Discrimination, economic segregation, racism, linguism, nationalism, ethnocentrism, EU-ism, and even vaccinism during the pandemic, which of course you know, has a lot of influence on having access to quality education, but also, and that's gonna be mostly my point here, epistemological injustice. And I do believe, as a specialist of interculturality who's been working on this for nearly 20 years, that we have the right and the duty to unthink, dialogue, and rethink what this idea of interculturality, which has been discussed for quite a long time now, what it is about, how we do it over and over again. And as a reminder, you know, when you look at the word dialogue in English, which is from the Greek, remember that dialogue doesn't mean two people talk, it's not two, but it's from dia, which means to come across between. So you cross over to the other as much as the other comes across. Recently, 2 years ago, at the beginning of the pandemic, a paper was published by Chinese colleagues around the field of interculturality in education, especially in relation to the concept of intercultural competence. So they did a bibliometric analysis of based on top journals in the world, especially SSCI journals, to look at, how this knowledge domain, in a sense, is, whose voices are we hearing? And this is what they found, which of course is not very surprising. But what they found was that, so the very big circles there are people based in the US or in the UK and who are mostly native speakers of English and white people. I'm sorry to mention skin color here. I think it was quite interesting that this paper came out just at the beginning of the pandemic, because what I have realized, and many other scholars also have realized throughout the pandemic, is that the imbalance in terms of who is being listened to, who is talking about interculturality in research and education, actually is just a confirmation of this. If you look at, for example, the latest models of interculturality that have been supported by and embedded in supranational institutions, such as the Council of Europe, the OECD, or the UNESCO, what you realize is that the people who have, whose ideas are being used for this are actually the same people that my Chinese colleagues actually identified in research. This is not good news, actually, because I like this phrase in Chinese of the cocooning oneself like silkworms. And when you look at the representation of my colleagues, of you know, the powerful voices in the field, it does look like a cocoon. And the consequences are that their voices, their ritornellos, their little tunes, you know, that have emerged from very specific parts of the world, actually they become the ritornellos for the rest of the world in education and research, masking, silencing, but also erasing what I will call global voices here. Now, recently I've used this metaphor of the octopus to try to explain that actually when you look at interculturality in different languages, in education and in research, and you know, politically also, you realize that it goes well beyond these, for example, two ritornellos, American multiculturalism between inverted commas and democratic culture as is being put forward in Europe at the moment, that there are other voices that basically we don't know much about. I have specialized over the past 3 years in one of those, which is called Minzu education, Minzu diversity education from China. I won't have time to say too much about this, but through my work there, you know, involving Finnish students, international students, and Chinese students talking to each other about this, we've discovered that, you know, actually we are missing out on alternative knowledge on this. I don't spend time on this, but even when we talk about the West, I mean, obviously talking about interculturality in the West, depending on where you are located in the West, there will be many and varied ideologies attached to it already in the concepts and the notions that we use or not use. And I've reproduced here, for example, forms that you will find in the US and in the UK in terms of, you know, how you put your identity forward. In China, on the form, you will find, for example, the authorities asking you about your Minzu so-called ethnic identity, which of course has an influence on how people will think about interculturality in education, what to teach, how to talk about it in a sense. So what is interculturality after all this? You know, I'm very much inspired by Shams here. I don't know if you know Shams, a very interesting Russian writer who describes here what he called a red-headed man. I'll read it for you because it's quite beautiful. And when I read it, this is what I'm thinking about interculturality after having looked into it, you know, from a much broader perspective than what I thought, for example, 3 years ago. There lived a red-headed man who had no eyes or ears. He didn't have hair either, so he was called a redhead arbitrarily. He couldn't talk because he had no mouth. He had no nose either. He didn't even have arms or legs. He had no stomach, he had no back, he had no spine, and he had no innards at all. He didn't have anything. So we don't even know who we're talking about. And through my research, encounters with people from different parts of the world, I've realized that, you know, we say interculturality, but most of the time, either we don't know really what it means, or we use it in a way that is actually so much influenced by certain ideologies that have been dominating the world in research. So these important questions, when we say interculturality in education, are we even talking about the same thing or same things? How come some of us are not heard or even allowed to talk about interculturality? And when you think about education, because the dominance of certain Western ideologies about interculturality that very often relates to the economic, are we adopting solutions, educational solutions that are really inclusive, fair and fair to all, when actually what has been decided about what we teach, how we teach and why we are teaching certain things, well, many people haven't actually been taken into account. I'm sorry, you can't read there, but I think it says, I need to make it smaller. Educate you. Well, that's back to my title, actually. I don't know if you've ever looked at the etymology of the words sustainability in the English language. Okay, we would need to do the same work in other languages. In the English language, it's very interesting because obviously, you know, the word originally comes from other languages like French and Latin. But what you can notice is that throughout the centuries, there's been slight or big variations in what they actually refer to, from giving support to, continuing, keeping on, enduring without failing or yielding, to refer to something defendable from 1845. And then more recently, you know, the capability of being continued at a certain level. Now, for interculturality as an object of research and education, I think that all these different meanings, historical meanings of the ideas of sustainable and sustainability are actually very interesting. Give support to, continue, keep up, endure without failing or yielding, defendable. And when I see these words, I'm thinking, listen to other voices on interculturality in education and research, but also be quiet sometimes. You know, people like me, we talk too much. You know, we are there on the floor, you know, spreading our own ideologies and not very often without, you know, listening or just being quiet. Dialogue with others around interculturality as an object of research and education. I'm not saying about the phenomenon of interculturality. Accept and negotiate change. It's really interesting because in the word interculturality, you have culture in the middle. Now, don't ask me to define it, actually, if you know my work, you'll know that I don't even look into this word. I just ignore this word completely these days. But what's interesting is when you look at the Chinese word for culture, wenhua, what you realize is that in the past, the idea of culture in China referred to something that was changing constantly, something that people would negotiate and co-construct together when they interacted with each other. So it's actually, I think culture in Chinese actually meant interculturality as such. So we need to accept also the change in the way we have been made and forced to think about it. And through my work over the past 2 years, of course, questioning the words and the ideologies, you know, sometimes not even hiding behind the words that we use to talk about interculturality. That's also very interesting. Next week, we are actually with a colleague of mine from Sweden. We are publishing a book in the French language called Interculturaliser l'interculturel, which is just about all this. You know, it's about interculturality as intercultural, interculturalizing interculturality. And we have a book forthcoming actually in 2022 in the English language where we continue talking about this and we talk about broken realities of interculturality today and rebellious dreams. So interculturality, what is interculturality? I had this question earlier. I think that's not a good question. If we try to change the way we deal with this issue in education and in society in a broader way, the questions, what is your interculturality? What is my interculturality? But also, can we unthink? Oh, interesting. I use thank there, unthank, and think, dialogue, or rethink together about what it is. I think these are much more interesting questions because they give space, or they can provide space for people to actually try to, you know, negotiate the meanings around this notion. I made up a word actually in the book that I just mentioned with Jakobson, the word encontrictions. I think that we need, encontrictions is a portmanteau word. So I'm combining two different words here to create a new word, encounters and frictions. So frictions is tensions in a sense, you know, allowing ourselves to disagree and speak our mind. I think that we really need these encontrictions around interculturality. And this is a short excerpt from the book, but we don't have time for this. So tension and hopefully release, tension, release. So we can, you know, start listening to others, start negotiating and realizing how actually the something that might sound very simple as interculturality deserves to be looked at from so many different perspectives. Now, in the book with Jakobson, these are some of the solutions. I can mention, for example, the one around which we call the fishing net and fountain of youth of multilingualism. What I've realized through my work with people from different countries is that we often have the illusion that because we can speak English so well together, when we talk about interculturality, the objectives of interculturality in education, that it's very transparent and we mean the same when for whatever word we use. Actually, that's a complete illusion. We need to, you know, look at what Canetti in the quote here says about this. He says, we must release people into the languages of the world to become wiser by the whole wealth of the incomprehensible. When I work with my Chinese colleagues and our Chinese students, most of the time, you know, it takes a long time to negotiate meanings around very simple words that we think are simple, such as tolerance, ethnicity, race, even culture and civilization. But we must take the time. So we are aware of the connotations of the word. You know, interculturality is very political, like sustainability, obviously. And the words and ideas that we use to talk about them are political and influenced by the economy. But are we aware of actually the politicality of the words in different languages and in different contexts? What can we learn by looking into actually the flavors and the different connotations of these words there? I can show you some very simple examples because time is running. The idea of tolerance, for example, in Chinese, there are two different words. Of course, the word tolerance has changed in the English language and many other Indo-European languages. But in Chinese, there are actually two different words for tolerance. One, which is more like, you know, positive, if you mean. So like, you know, opening up to the other, you know, accepting difference and all these kinds of ideas. But there's also another word which actually means bearing. So it means like actually making such an effort, even though you may not be so willing, but you have to do it. So it's not a pleasant experience. So when I set up the goal of tolerance, for example, for interculturality in English, I need to make sure that, for example, when I speak to someone who works on these issues in Chinese, you know, which idea do they put behind this word? Because these are very different. Another very simple example is, I mean, that's not a very, you know, common word that we use every day, but still it's relevant for interculturality, which is the idea of exoticism, which has, of course, a very special flavor today in you know, most part of the so-called Western world. Now, in Chinese, when you look at this word, actually, if you look at the two characters, there's a clear reference to a country or a nation, you know, with the second character of the word. And the flavors. You know, what comes to mind when people hear this word yi guo in Chinese will not necessarily be the same flavors or you know, maybe ideas, you know, that come to mind if you hear that word in the Finnish language or in the French language or whatever other language. So when we talk to each other, maybe we do not even realize that we are not connoting the words the same ways. Now, these are, I'm sorry, you can't probably see so well. I'll try to blow up a little bit. This is the kind of work that we are doing online with students in China, with students in Finland and other countries, whereby we ask them to negotiate the meanings and the flavors of all these different words that we use to talk about interculturality, and especially for them to start thinking about what we have been calling in our research, the Chinese stories of interculturality. Because when you start getting interested in China, but also other parts of the world, you realize that there are specific narratives, specific, you know, slogans, mottos, as much as we do around interculturality, and that it's important for people to be aware of those so that, you know, we can, number one, open up to them and then start thinking about our own ideologies, for example, but then at the same time, allow people to reflect really around the complexity of putting words on interculturality. I'll finish here. Obviously, to be continued, you know, the right and duty to unthink dialogue and rethink what interculturality is about, how to do it over and over again, I think, of course, is very much related to this idea of sustainability. You know, in order to discuss sustainability, you know, amongst different kinds of people, first of all, we need to reflect on how we communicate with each other. How can we open up to each other, in a sense, and reflect on how we see the world? Some suggestions for education in red there. Opening up to multiple, really multiple global, local perspectives, questioning dominating knowledge in terms of ideologies, the orders that we are given by, you know, decision makers, supranational institutions, but also researchers and educators at the same time who have to follow, in a sense, these orders. Listen, talk, allow to disagree. And in Chinese, there's a nice phrase, which is giving the right to speak to people. You know, because there are so many people around the world, students, scholars, even decision makers who don't have the right to speak about certain topic. But how can we talk about interculturality, sustainability when we don't allow them to talk, in a sense? And when I mean allow them to talk, it's really allowed to talk, even if we disagree, because we don't understand or we don't know actually what they are talking about. And then finally, I'll repeat this, pay attention to the connotations of the words we use to talk about interculturality. Now, this seminar is in English, like many seminars at the moment. That's great. We're so lucky. We can talk to each other. But the illusion that the English language can really allow us to understand each other, I think we need to be extremely careful about this. When I say this in English, I never assume that when other people use the same words in English, that they actually mean the same. I need to talk, get into their understanding of the word, get into the word in other languages as well. And I'll leave you with two quite interesting quotes from Canetti, whom I mentioned earlier, which I think are very inspiring. Canetti was himself an extremely intercultural person. And I think that these two quotes are very inspiring for an event like this one. I thank you very much. I think I don't have time left for questions, but if there is some time, I'm happy to take a couple of questions, or I'm happy to answer questions via email. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred, so much. So, guys, that was Fred Ervin, professor of multicultural education. And he answered, can we teach sustainability? And I think he answered it really, really well. And so now I think, Fred, we do have time for like one quick question or two. So first I would like to ask if someone here present at the audience has any questions to Fred or comments. I don't think there was anyone raised hands.
No, I didn't. I didn't see any questions there.
Okay, I think you answered it so well that nobody is asking any questions. So, oh, here's one question. Okay, he can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's a very thought-provoking talk, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I come from biological disciplines, so sort of hard science. And issues like sustainability are defined not by cultural, but empirical data. It's about, research that is not based on cultural interpretation. This is the data that are coming. We have methods that are not cultural to analyze it and draw conclusions. So I just wonder how this fits, because it's cross-cultural empirical research in its nature. It's independent from the culture.
So, I can take your point. I'm not a scientist myself, so I don't know much about this, but several thoughts come to mind. So what you are saying is that people around the world will agree around research results. They will not have different paradigms, and in different languages, they will not have like different words to discuss their results, to disseminate their results. I mean, it's not just about the research as it is, in a sense, but it's also about how do people talk about what they are doing to the broader world. And how do they talk to each other, in a sense? When you say there's no culture in this, I don't like the word culture, but there is politics, there is economical forces, there is, in a sense, still the intersubjectivity of the one who is talking about their research when they discuss it with people, maybe even within, and especially within academia, in a sense. What are your views on this?
I'm not sure we have time for the dialogue.
Yes, yes.
My point is that it would be very helpful for the humanity's survival to become cross-cultural in such issues. We either survive or not, the world either heats to 1.5 or 4 degrees or not. So there is needs also to overcome cultures in a way. No.
I see what you are trying to say. So you're trying to say, in a sense, from your perspective, because many people would disagree with you, even scientists, the way some people discuss sustainability from a scientific perspective, in a sense, can give the illusion of universality, in a sense. I say the illusion because I'm sure there are many people, many scientists who will disagree. Although, you seem to be saying that this is universal, it's cross-cultural, but obviously, I'm pretty sure that in the way people report their research, the way people deal with decision makers about their research, there is a lot of disagreement, I'm sure, and there's a lot of misunderstanding as well, because there's not just what you are doing as a researcher, but also around how you communicate around your research. And this is, of course, the main problem that I see from my perspective as an interculturalist and educator. Of course, the science part, there's nothing I can say because that's not my field. But I still believe that communication part will make what you are doing maybe not so intercultural rather than cross-cultural. But maybe we need an entire conference on that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So now